Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and we're lucky to have this week both Steve and Sean. How are you guys doing?
Hey, John. Doing pretty well. How are you?
Good, good.
John, what's going on? Excited for this conversation. Lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about. The never-ending, changing world of fintech never stops,
Ever
even while you
evolving.
sleep. That's right. It is all over the world and 24/7. That's the whole thing with DeFi, right? Never sleep.
That's right. When you remember that movie Wall Street with Michael Douglas? Well, the whole thing about money never sleeps. That's really what DeFi is all about. Money does not sleep. And it's
Especially when
24
your
hours.
cryptocurrencies are going down.
It's a roller coaster for sure.
Well, Coinbase is making a ton of money off of cryptocurrency trading. I'm sure they're sleeping just fine.
It's I'm guessing that they are. Yeah. So they've actually if you look at their stock in terms of when they IPO'd a few months ago, it's not up significantly, but the fact that they've been able to put up a pretty good quarter and that the market reacted in a very positive way kind of points to what could be, in my opinion, I think kind of a fairy tale ending for the whole Coinbase story. So the argument has been for some time that once the steamy checks ran out, and the people kind of saw as the market was going down that we might have seen a decline in the price of Coinbase stock, but quite the opposite. They've actually been able to just, ride that wave and put up amazing numbers, and I think it shows in the valuation. And if I were a betting man, I would definitely bet on Coinbase as well.
Well, I think we've established you're not a betting man for
I am
sure.
certainly not a betting man. No, I'm also quite a skittish man.
It's only been a few months. They went public in April, I think it was, and their market cap said a paltry $77 billion.
The thing that all folks in the crypto space now are looking at, as I'm sure you guys know, is regulation. So regulation right now in the space is really, really a going to change the way that the space evolves. What's happened with this new infrastructure bill was there was a lot of inclusions of tax language around crypto. So we'll see how that plays out. I think it'll be interesting to see how DC wants to regulate this industry. And it's a sign of maturation. It's a sign that it's a teenager that is needing to have a curfew. You got to have some guardrails. It's still early in the life of crypto, so it'll be exciting to actually see it regulated.
So interesting. So this is a bit of a digression. So I apologize in advance. But I've always loved the concept
Apology
of
accepted.
how. Oh, thank you. So gracious of you. But I've always loved the idea of how constraints can drive creativity and create positive change in the market. And I'll give you the example that I love. So there was a film movement from the early 90s called Dogma 94. I think it was Danish. And the idea was that you had all these constraints that you can only shoot with real light. The stories had to be grounded in reality. So, and those constraints and that movement really created a lot of really amazing movies from the 90s. So I sort of see, to go back to the crypto example here, the notion that maybe creating some guardrails, creating some oversight will just result in a more efficient, better market for all this stuff, which has been really kind of the Wild West for the past 10 years or so.
100% agree with you. I mean, this is a good thing. If there's, I think there's two ways to look at this. It's looking at this in the short term and thinking about some companies that may get hit, their revenues hit in the short term, which inevitably will happen in the space. And then the long term view, which is that in 5 to 10 years, we'll look back on this phase and be like, this regulation was needed because people will have a better, like you alluded to, Steve, people will have a better understanding of the world and they'll have clarity on regulations. So there will be more prospects for growth.
It is, and it's also, we should note that also a lot of the common regulation for crypto is coming from Gary Gensler, who actually taught a class on cryptocurrency at MIT, so he knows this stuff pretty well. And it's nice to have an adult in the room that understands the value of this. But I'm wondering, Sean, from a sort of from a philosophical perspective, right? A lot of the appeal of crypto was that you would have minimal or essentially no government interference, and it seems like this will be kind of encroaching upon the idea of crypto as an independent, decentralized way to do business, right? So how do you think you can grok the idea of creating sort of this libertarian paradise of crypto and Bitcoin with having, again, some government oversight and some guardrails for the space?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's what you're saying basically is that, if I understand correctly, that it's kind of the antithesis of crypto at its core to be regulated, right? It's kind of like exactly. those things. Yeah. And that's, you know, crypto natives, of course, like the ones that have been in the space for, you know, years now, certainly, I think many of them will certainly agree, but they also are reasonable. Like folks that have been in the industry for a while are reasonable and know that even though the ethos of crypto is away from institution, or at least supposed to help divert against corrupt institutions, not just, you know, like corrupt governments globally, there's value though in those folks even agree there's value in regulating it. Of course, like you look at the US government, US government's just trying to do the right thing and to protect investors from losing their capital. So in case of taxing, this is a benevolent action, in my view, that's actually helping investors be more cognizant of their investments. But it is interesting because if you look at the DNA of crypto, it actually it can be counter to some of the things you think about. But at the same time, it just needs to happen. So I think we'll find a happy middle ground. And you know, you will. The cool thing about this space too, Steve, is like lawyers in the space are sort of crafting the way that a new asset class is going to operate. And it's not the same rules as Wall Street. It's different playbook. So those folks are really like trailblazing new territory. So it'll be exciting to see it play out.
Yeah. And then on the other side, you see a lot of the more successful fintechs actually becoming banks, joining the dark side, if you will, and getting a bank charter and becoming the man down the line. Circle's actually looking for their bank charter. They're not the first, but it's interesting that they would actually need or look for that as part of their growth.
It is. It's also interesting because there's been a lot of really interesting thinking about this idea, right? The idea is that once a Circle becomes fully regulated by the Fed, they will essentially become, you know, their coin, which is the USDC, could become the de facto central bank in the US, which is a huge, huge deal.
So it's fascinating you bring it up too. If you think about how regulation might impact this, really like, take capital requirements, for example, like you alluded to that, Steve. Mm-hmm. I personally think that's a good thing. I think like these institutions either know that it's needed or want to be regulated so that they can grow properly. So capital requirements are, you know, in essence, helping the bank survive. So if we have to regulate the industry and like this is the phase we're at, actually it could be a really good thing to protect both the individual and the bank from insolvency.
Yeah, and they're not the only ones that are trying to replace the existing system, the infrastructure. Ripple, for example, is working hard with banks all over the world to replace the international payments infrastructure.
Let's go with Enhance or Augment or something. but they announced a partnership with a company out of South Korea called Global Money Express. And the idea is that they would use the Ripple rails to do remittance payment. What's interesting is that Ripple recently announced that they've seen a 130% increase in year-over-year transactions coming from Asia, which is their fastest-growing region, right? And it seems like a lot of the focus now, although we see, you know, things in Africa and in the Western Hemisphere and even in Europe, seems to be really in Asia.
Yeah, they have a lot of partnerships already in Southeast Asia, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. There's also some really interesting use cases of digital currencies I'm starting to see in Africa, where folks are trying to send remittance payments either to or from African nations, or have their money on their digital wallet so they're not that money isn't stolen from corrupt authorities. So all around, I think Ripple certainly is also coming back from a lot of regulatory I think difficulties, but it's interesting to see them surge back a bit.
Yeah, they're still slugging it out with the SEC. That hasn't been resolved yet on the whole XRP as a security kind of thing. But, you know, they're using their blockchain and the XRP, the cryptocurrency itself, isn't necessary for this whole payment structure. But that's the whole difference between the cryptocurrency kind of angle and the DLT blockchain kind of solutions, which seems more like commercial friendly, if you will, for as far as having a secure solution for some things. Just having it blockchain based and on some limited permissions network, and then it becomes that. Whereas cryptocurrency is more like an investment or for a different use than a commercial backend.
Yeah.
But Ripple is a good example because their XRP is, you know, used for speculation, and they go out of their way to say that they're block, it's not required. And the blockchain and RippleNet is the real solution.
That's a really good point there. And a question for the both of you. So I know that in the early days of crypto, I think that remittances became sort of a very easy to discern use case for this. But if you look at just the remittance use case, right? So sending money back to a country, say, you know, Mexico, the Philippines, or what have you, what do you think will be the future of this industry? If you look at, you know, Western Union, but also companies like Transfer and Ripple, do you think the future is in
Transfer Wise?
Or what, which is not Wise, yeah. Or
Transfer. Yeah, we're not Wise.
The Transfer name, yeah, just Wise. But do you think that the future is basically partnerships like that, where you have Ripple and a remittance company, and they can transfer stuff via their blockchain? Or do you see it more as a direct-to-consumer, straight up just a startup doing transfers using blockchain?
Yeah, I think the consumer, it'll be so embedded. Let's bring up another buzzword, embedded finance. It'll be just so built in that the consumer won't even know what technology is powering that. So it could be a blockchain or a non-blockchain solution, but so many people are working on this instant P2P payment structure that I think it'll just be, you know, part of so many things that people won't even think about it. On the back end, I guess you have to see who's going to win on the technology side. And I think there'd be a couple of different technologies, you know, blockchain and non-blockchain based that will end up doing that. But I don't think a cryptocurrency will be necessary for it.
Yeah, interesting point. I think to extrapolate on that, what you mentioned, John, was embedded finance, as much of it is a buzzword, it's certainly going to be more important now as so many institutions now are trying to become banks. So if you even look at what Jack Dorsey said today on Twitter about having Twitter accounts, each Twitter account have its own, you know, would have its own, the hypothetical of each Twitter account having its own digital wallet address. So there, so many of these companies are starting to embed these financial solutions further into social apps. You look at what's happening in China, and there's so much. WePay is like its own ecosystem with payments, or WeChat is its own ecosystem as payments infrastructure. So the trend is just going in that direction. And like you said, I mean, people want their money and they want it now, you know, or you alluded to. No one wants to wait for their money. Give them an option to get it faster and cheaper, and they'll always choose that. So it'll be really interesting to see how these companies embed finance even more into their infrastructure.
I'm waiting for my money and I want it now.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Nobody's sending it, but I still want it.
Yeah. I'm always amazed how, you know, players like Western Union can still be, you know, dominant because they're so expensive and so inefficient and so slow.
That's right. Steve always wants the future. Where's my flying car? Isn't that what you're always saying?
But one of my favorite bands from the 2000s was a band called We Were Promised Jetpacks, which I think sort of encapsulates the disillusionment with technology.
You can have a jetpack, but you'll probably kill yourself.
It may, exactly.
It's like the jetpacks are like the Dogecoin. You can buy some instant payment thing, and you'll have wild volatility. You'll have very speculative, but it'll work. It'll work for now.
Yeah, for now.
I think Swift is under threat, right? They're the ones that are doing all the international payments, and, you know, charge a big premium for being a big traditional reliable commercial network, and that's who Ripple really wants to take down. I think they've mentioned a few times.
But I think they are.
It's kind of forcing them to upgrade too, because they talk about like a Swift blockchain-like characteristics to speed up. So I think just like banks have had to up their game and have good mobile features and or try to and move forward, move ahead, get digital. You know, at the least you could say is the newer fintechs, the ones that are pushing the most, are making the incumbents perform a little bit better at least.
Yeah, I think they announced recently that they're looking to either cut their fees or cut their wait time for international wires by a third or something. So they are going in that direction. It's just again going super super slowly.
I'm so curious to like see what companies like Visa are thinking, because like you said, I mean, they're just, the space is moving so fast that you have these legacy players that I would imagine have to be at least a little scared. And then with like the Plaid acquisition falling through for a company like Visa, they've got to be on the hunt for good acquisitions, because like this space is moving so fast. The only thing you can do is really cut and acquire, because for a lot of these verticals, because they're already so far along.
Yeah, actually, Visa is moving ahead. They just bought Tink for what, $2 billion?
Oh,
that's
right.
The open banking platform. Oh. So I don't think that's stopping them. Visa and MasterCard have had so many acquisitions to keep their primary spot at the center of the back-end payment rails. And they're spending up to stay there. I would almost put them in the fintech world. They've just had so many acquisitions and are moving forward.
They have, although I got to say that I'm pretty annoyed that I'm a big fan of the Olympics, and essentially every third ad was a freaking Visa ad. So it's just like, I get it. You're a network. You're amazing. Yeah. Sure. But please stop.
Maybe by the next Olympics, it'll be brought to you by Tink.
Yeah.
I love that name, by the way, Tink.
It's an awesome name.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Did you get your payment? Oh, that guy hasn't tinked me yet.
It's a verb too.
Yeah.
It's a verb.
Well, all the best brands are.
They are. Yeah.
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 Hey, FinTech Newscast that to me.
Yeah. What would be our verb actually?
Oh,
drop some FinTech knowledge.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Get me up to date.
Okay. So, hey, Mom, I got to work on my algebra homework. Can you please FinTech newscast it to me?
Put it in a sentence. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's a little clunky, but I like it.
Yeah.
Just like us.
Yeah.
Especially after COVID. See.
Yes.
Quick Google. And I see Visa bought something else called Currency Cloud. Another great name. I think Visa picks their companies by the name.
Yeah, I've seen some of these acquisitions, but when you compare like Square's acquisition of Afterpay, I think it puts the Tink acquisition and the others that Visa is acquiring, and I'm a fan of Visa. It does make it clear that Square is and Stripe and these other players are giving Visa a run for their money, and they've got to be at least a little concerned. I mean, of course they're going to go out and acquire, but you look at Afterpay and the amount of volumes that they were exchanging, or that the volumes going through Afterpay before the acquisition, it's astronomical. And Square, I mean, Square paid for them, but with a pretty big hefty price tag. But that to me seems like a very strategic play, and I think in ways you could argue it's more impactful than some of the other acquisitions payments processors are making, but. Either way, I think they have to have their eye on what's going on. And
you love the newer
scared.
Players. Huh? Would you be considered Gen Z, Gen A, Gen or a millennial still?
I think I'm a millennial. Yeah.
I think you're in the middle of a millennial. Yeah.
Think,
you're a hardcore millennial.
When the one guy on the podcast says, Visa, whatever, I don't care. They're old school. What I like are the new guys. I think that's the youngest guy on the podcast.
that is for sure.
Not the gray hair. Visa, that's all right, I guess. Whatever. But Afterpay, that's fun. That's true. But I think the overall picture is that everyone's having to up their game. So that's a definite win for everybody.
Yep.
Isn't it weird how competition is good?
Yeah. Up in your game. Always good.
America.
Yeah. Always good.
And another good side effect is more money for everybody, right?
Everybody gets just more money.
In theory. Again, I'm still waiting for it. Yeah.
In theory. One of my favorite gifts to use on WhatsApp is the one where Leo DiCaprio throwing money at the federal agents from the movie Wolf of Wall Street, sort of flicking dollars away. And I think that's what we see now with Wall Street. So there was a report that came out recently that, you know, because of the pandemic, because of the competition from tech, because of a number of factors, because of people actually speaking up and saying this is too much work, all of the big banks on Wall Street have actually began to increase the base salary of all of their entry-level analysts. So to give you a sense of what the numbers are, the typical entry-level salary was about $85K a year or so. And now they're all at least 100 and some at 110K a year. So they've seen, you know, call it a 15% increase. And a lot of it is because, again, kids either don't want to work the crazy hours where they're working, you know, Monday through Saturday. And I should know that I used to work in the JP Morgan building in New York at 270 Park. And I would see the kids and they're all kids, of course, in their offices, you know, on a Friday night past 9 p.m. Like I'd be on my way back from happy hour and they're still like cranking away at the office doing their thing. And I've heard multiple studies that show that, you know, if you make $85K a year, but you're working, you know, 70 hours a week, you're basically getting something barely above minimum wage. Mind you, of course, you have other prospects. It's a more high status
job. And that's
job.
New York City too. So you're
really it's behind. New York City. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, these people are or working London. In insane hours. Right, right. But yeah, it seems like they're both addressing the needs and the demands of you know their youngest employees in terms of the dress code, now the pay as well. And I know that at least one bank came out and said that they will have a policy where their analysts can no longer work on Sundays. So they can work on Saturdays, but not on Sundays anymore. So things are moving in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. These are crazy expensive places. On top of it, it reminds me of that one scene in Fleabag where she charges her rich sister $15 for a sandwich. And the sister just goes, ah, London. You're being scammed by her sister. God damn it, I had a follow-up to that. I'm sure they appreciated you laughing as you were walking out at 5 o'clock every day on top of it.
Call it six, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I also find myself to be the worst dressed person on that street because everyone's just flashing their amazing suits and their shiny Italian shoes. But it's a whole lifestyle.
It sounds like it's out of a scene out of Wolf of Wall Street. So did you make a cameo in that movie?
No, I did not. No, I didn't get called up for that. But hopefully the sequel.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see also where the young talent's going these days. I mean, I've seen, you know, just from my vantage point, a trend where the younger folks are not as excited about working at these legacy banks. I mean, there's less of an appeal. Before it was the money, but you have these newer players coming in with their VC, you know, injected dollars and right. Either matching or outpaying these folks, and then like these. Outpaying these traditional banks, but you can't forget the equity too. If you're getting a few thousand shares of equity in a company like Stripe, right? Like that is worth at least a few bonuses. And then you also don't really have to deal with that old school culture. So the calculus, I think, for a lot of the younger crowd is changing. And then on top of that, you add the mission element too, which a lot of these tech companies are so good at painting their mission in line with what the youngins want these days. And I think, I mean, they're really like, you're back to the whole Visa, like legacy companies. I think these companies have to be scared at least a little bit because the newer players are coming in, giving just as good packages, sometimes bigger packages. And, you know, you're going to go with the bigger package, right? So
that's what she said.
Is that? Oh,
too easy.
Too easy.
John's mind's in the gutter. I was gonna say.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah. But so actually, I think Sean's saying it's all worth it. Yeah. Work your fingers to the bone. It'll work out all right.
It's all worth it. No, yeah. It's actually you mentioned sort of the fact that some of the fintechs can be more quote unquote mission driven. But there's actually a really interesting article by our friend Ron Shevlin, friend of the pod, that he published this week, where he highlights that this whole idea that fintechs are more ethical than banks is actually kind of a fallacy in a way, and that they're still making money. They're still essentially making most of the revenues from people who don't pay, whom they charge a lot. In the case of some startups that they deal with credit and lending. So I think that a lot of the recruiters of these companies have been able to get away with a lot of sort of fuzzy thinking about what's good for the planet. When in reality, we're all just here to make money, man. We just want to pay our rent and live a good life.
Yeah, and
that's my mission.
I don't disagree with that. I think they're just better at painting their mission to, yeah. They're better at selling it, you know, and packaging it up and marketing it to folks.
Better branding,
yeah, brighter colors.
There was just a new Rick and Morty on this. You guys watch Rick and Morty?
Not the latest one.
I love Rick and Morty, though.
The new kid at the school gets invited, Morty invites him over, and him and his sister are going out of their way to impress him because he's the new kid and he has no flaws yet and he hasn't embarrassed himself yet. So he's automatically super cool because he's like a mystery and he hasn't done anything yet. Mm. So it kind of reminds me of that, right? So you're new, you haven't broken any laws because you're too new. You haven't abused anybody because you just got there.
Except that they have, like, you know, we've talked about Robinhood for so long and Ripple, and it seems like at even Wealthfront, there seems to be a lot of things that have,
but don't worry,
gone on. So yeah, this whole aura of like,
don't worry, Sean, driven. we'll save some Kool-Aid for you.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I remember what happened at Coinbase last year with, you know, 10% of their folks walking out because of all the Black Lives Matter controversy, and obviously stuff at Robinhood, really tragic stuff. I mean, I think like they're just better at packaging their mission when it comes to actually executing on it. We'll see, but they have really good marketers, and I think oftentimes better packages. So
it depends what you're looking for. I mean, if you want to make millions, that's being an investment banker is not a bad selling point either. I don't know what's and that's what those people are joining for. But yeah, a lot of people are looking for for sure on the consumer side, something that's more ESG friendly. And so, you know, if you tell people, is this an investment fund carbon neutral? Why not?
Sure. It's
carbon neutral. Yeah, there's no regulations or anything. That's actually another regulation that will come out is that's going to happen in the next few years is ESG certification, because everybody just says they're ESG or they're carbon friendly and using all these marketing tools. I know that's true from the consumer side. I think the younger people are more excited to work at the new tech thing, and maybe they don't have a choice to go to the investment banking route. So there's more opportunities out there. But a lot of startups fail also. So there's never quite 100% reward without the risk also. I mean, we talk about the successes, but for every Robin Hood and Stripe, there's dozens of not quite so successful. I'll call them learning experiences.
Learning experiences, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Makes sense. And also folks in their longer, in their early in their career can take risks. That too. Yep.
Yeah. You can take some risks and some that you know about and some that you really never intended to take, like getting your crypto stolen. That can happen, right, Steve?
It can happen, but it can also have a really happy ending. So there was
a really happy ending?
Sure. Yeah. It sort of is. Yeah. So there was a crypto exchange called Poly that got hacked, and hackers made off with $600 million of cryptocurrency, which is a huge amount of money. That's a massive amount of money. But, you know, flipping the script here, they actually returned most of it, which is random. And apparently they did it for funsies. And they returned everything but $30 million. It seems like a white hat pack. I have no idea what they
would
do. I don't
know if stealing $30 million is a white hack, but
they were gracious enough. They were great.
When
they
you compare it to 600, link it to that to the other amount, it's just not. It's peanuts, right? But apparently they did it because they wanted to make sure that this company had really good security standards in place. And again, it was just for the lulz, which is a random reason to hack $500 million. But hey, it's 2021. It's what we do.
I completely disagree with you on this. If I made $30 million from hacking somebody, even if there was 10 of us, we only get $3 million each. That's not just for the lulz. How is that just for the lulz if you get $30 million?
I think for the lulz is the fact that they actually returned, you know, $560 million that they actually had and that they could have actually made off with, right? So it seems I don't know what they're.
I swear, officer, I was going to steal more, but I only took this. So
I only took this much.
I'm only going to break your finger, Steve, but I'm not going to shoot you in the chest. Does that sound like a win?
Only your pinky. Only your pinky.
Yeah.
It's like you set the expectation to something, and then it's kind of like a sales strategy in a way where it's like, you know, this car goes for this amount, like 2 million, but I'll give it to you for 300,000. But I also get it. I mean, like they couldn't have been like what Steve's saying, I think, is that they're not, you know, they did have I guess I don't know what the right word would be, but like the gall to do it and then return it. I mean, were they trying to like prove a point or something? Like, what was there a rationale behind why they did
just
it?
To rub it in your face? I could take it. I could give it back. I could give some of it back. Whatever. You're under my mercy.
I think it's basically that. Yeah. I think it's just
hey, and by the way, upgrade your password from password.
Exactly.
Yeah. A lot of these, I've been seeing a lot of interesting, basically like hacker games in the crypto world that companies and protocols, currencies are basically telling hackers or whoever, like our computer developers, if you can show us a bug in our system, we will award you a certain amount. So you, they're basically incentivizing, like if you like think about the government, like counterintelligence.
Very, very different from this. This scenario.
Yeah, it's definitely
so.
Yeah,
so, Steve, I'm going to break into your account, take 100,000, and then I'm going to give you back 80,000. I'm a good guy.
Hey, but at least I will have learned my lesson. But I will have learned my lesson. Yeah.
Okay.
A lesson worth $20,000. Why not?
All right, then. I think that's a good place to wrap up a Friday the 13th episode with things a little bit scary, but hey, there's always a silver lining.
Spooky hacks.
Spooky hacks. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Anything can be hacked, apparently, right? Nothing's 100%
not
safe.
Not your brain. Not yet. So Elon
Musk
comes
around. Not yet.
I don't know. Well, you know, it's got to be something somebody wants to hack, though. Come on. All right.
Give yourself more credit than that.
Yeah. All right. Well, make sure your password is a little bit better than 123456 or password. Which I think I saw some people still used when they reveal these things. But stay safe out there. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.